You're listening to The Daily Buzz on KCPW and KCPW.org. This is day 9. My name is John Wildman of Festworks.com, and we are on location in Park City, Utah at the 2017 Sundance Film Festival. We're coming to you from historic Main Street, where we have been for 10 days interviewing some of the most important voices of the independent film world. Our Daily Buzz studio is right in the center of all the festival action during the day at PC Live and is the home of Chef Dance at night. Today is a special show from the 13th Annual Asian Filmmakers Experience in Park City, where we'll be looking at conversations about elevate, incubate, and demonstrate advancing Asian American artists. Panel that is moderated by David Magdell of David Magdell & Associates and includes Ann Lai of the Sundance Institute, Lisa Nishimura of Netflix, Effie Brown, the producer of Dear White People, Brixen Diamond from the Black House Foundation, and Grace Lee, who is a filmmaker, American Revolutionary, The Evolution of Grace Lee Boggs, Justin Chan, who has a film at the festival this year, Gook, and Philip Fung of the A3 Foundation.
All right, we're ready? All right, we're good. Right. First of all, welcome to the Asian Pacific Filmmakers Experience here in Park City and at Sundance. It's great to have you guys here. Today is Sunday, and it's January 22nd, and it's so great to have you guys here. This year, here in Park City, there are 69 filmmakers who have film projects here. It's great. So give them a round of applause. That's amazing. You know, and what we want to do is continue this every year. So in 2002, let's back up. Justin Lin brought Better Luck Tomorrow. Roger Ebert stood up and said he can make whatever film he wanted to make. Wow. Now we fast forward 15 years and we got Justin Chan, who's got Goop here in the next section. So make sure if you don't have your tickets, get that. They had the world premiere last night and it was off the hook. It was really great. So I just want to say thank you all for coming. And today's panelists is really going to be great. I mean, the theme of this, and we were thinking about putting this together, we were like, oh, you know, we could call it, you know, like the status of Asian Americans in media, but it felt like a term paper. So we said, we need a call to action. You know, if anything, if you guys were at the Women's March yesterday, or if you had been lucky, it was a call to action, right? Because we all need to be awake. We all need to be active. We can't be sitting on the sidelines waiting for somebody else. So we came up with elevate, incubate, and demonstrate. And later we're going to celebrate. But right now, for the elevate, you know, it's really elevating our artists, elevating our stories, you know, and how do we do that? How do we individually do that? And how do we incubate our storytellers so that they can go on and tell our stories? Because we want people that are telling our stories that are about our people, that are from our community. And then on demonstrate, it's really about demonstrating our support for the talent, demonstrating your talent as you put it out there for the world to see. And then also, if you want to demonstrate when you see something of representation that doesn't speak to you, that's supposed to be you, then demonstrate your opposition to that. And I think that's something we just want to make sure that we all instill and we walk away from today. So we're going to start off first. We got Miss Effie T. Brown. And we all know her. Producer. She was here in 2002 when we were here with Better Luck Tomorrow. And she was here with Real Women Have Curves. And she set it off then. And we all, those of you who've been following Project Greenlight a couple years ago, we saw her. And what I think the takeaway that I know I took away was that you weren't afraid to talk about what the diversity was. You know, I mean, and I'm so sorry, but diversity is a word that kind of like gets thrown around a lot. But you spoke up and it was a teachable moment. And you took that moment and taught people what they need to know. So to start us off, you know, talk about the history. Talk about your history being up here at Sundance. And then also, you know, what has it been for you being who you are in the industry? I mean, you've had a long career, and it hasn't been easy. But, you know, you're there, you know, and you're still inspiring people. So please give us your interpretation.
And I talk loud anyway, so just beware. I just want to say thank you so much for having me. It really is an honor and a privilege to be a part of this. And then just sort of going the first part of the question, which is like my experience at Sundance. I started out as an independent producer, and that is still what I am. Is this microphone? Because it's the mic here. It's gonna. Thank you. There you go. Before, now I feel really like a star. now I feel weird. But anyway, but I do films that are about the other. And the people that are marginalized or have been disenfranchised are not represented in films and community. And from Real Women Have Curves to Rocket Science to Stranger Inside to the last film that we did here that was Dear White People. Yeah. Like, these are the movies that I feel that sort of elevate the game and sort of get people used to seeing people of color in leading roles that aren't necessarily about them being people of color, you know? So that's all, thank you, but like, that's always been my passion and what I wanted to do. And I'm always just really grateful. And I love the fact that you said call to action, because that's something that I really do want to hit home. Like, I try to make films that are about people of color and women and you know, LGBT, like Q. There's another number, I don't, letter, I don't know. But you always try to do that. And sometimes it's not so popular. Like right now, I'm not gonna go into the film that I'm working on now, but dealing with the studio, when you talk about bringing in people in front of as well as behind the scene, and they're like, we just want the best person for the job. You know what I mean? You're like, we all want the best person for the job, but the best person for the job doesn't necessarily have to be another white man. Just to be real about it, and then having to have those conversations. And I'm a little older and longer in my career, so I can take a couple hits. You know what I mean? Maybe people who are coming up might not be able to speak so frankly, but that's where I see that, you know, the call to action of really having to have the courage of your conviction to talk about it and to make the mandate of, you know, Asian American, people of color, women in the film, and also telling their own stories. And I know we'll get into that later, but like, you know, to like tell your own story, have people represent your, you know, not having, I call it white, I won't get into that, the casting of it all, where it's like literally, in my opinion, I call it like whitewashing, you know what I mean? Where it's like, that is not the, you know, that's not, I call it proper. Or what, it's not representing the actual story and the culture, but you're doing it for, like, you know, box office. And I'm sure you're probably gonna get into that later, so I'm just gonna do-do-boo. That's all I got.
Thank you. Thank you, Effie. Sitting next to Effie is Lisa Nishimura, who is the Vice President of Original Documentaries over at Netflix. And I have to say, I had the pleasure of working with her, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago when we worked together on The Square and I got nominated for the Oscar. I remember when I first went in, they said Netflix bought this film. I didn't know who she was. So walked in, I thought, oh my God, it's an Asian sister sitting here. And you know, I know she has a tough job because she's sitting up there and she's got a lot of, you know, hurdles that she has to jump through. But I think what she gets to do, which is really amazing, I find amazing, is you're sitting there making some decisions, but you know what that landscape is. And I think a lot of us in here who are first-time filmmakers, even veteran filmmakers, that landscape of distribution, exhibition, getting our stories out is changing every day. And it's promising because it's no longer just, you know, TV and film, but it's everything. And, you know, I'm so glad you took the time because we know you're so busy, but whatever we can do to support you in your role, we're here. Just, I want you to remember that, so. But what I want you to, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, like, what does that new landscape look for? Because, I mean, what is that on the horizon?
Comedies? Yeah, I do comedy as well. Hi, everybody, how are you doing? Good? All right, well, thank you for having me. It's a real thrill to be here. And it's so timely to be able to talk about this. So I think what's exciting at Netflix, I'm in my 10th year at the company.
Oh, wow.
So I've seen a lot of evolution. But the first job I had at Netflix, I was buying DVDs for the United States from all the independent filmmakers. So I was buying documentaries, I was buying comedy. I was basically buying everything except the big superhero studio movies. But what that allowed me to do is to understand that there's a genuine hunger and thirst for great content from a diversity of voices. That was obvious from the very, very get-go. You want me to hold it? Sure. Is it?
I'm loud. You're a good
So now, fast forward today, where we're doing original content across a vast array of formats, right? And what we're creating is for a global audience. So just to sort of level set, today we are in 190 countries. Wow. We're in just shy of 94 million households. Each of those households has multiple profiles, 2 to 4 family members, so you can do the math. And right now, just shy of 50% of that audience is ex-US. So what's exciting is when we wake up and we go to work every day, what we know is that the people that are making those decisions, so inside the walls of Netflix, the people that we choose to work with, the storytellers, the producers, the people behind the camera, the people in front of the camera, have to be reflective of the audiences they need to speak to, right?
Yes.
So the beauty is that we have the scale and we have the opportunity to do that. So it's a huge, huge, exciting moment for us because we have the ability to, in that way, really find those authentic storytellers that are going to connect genuinely with those audiences. And the way the distribution platform works is because we're ubiquitous. So if you're an original Netflix series, film, short, documentary, stand-up comedy, we launched that title simultaneously around the world in 190 countries at the same time. And that means you can start a conversation about your work, because that's almost always happening on social media that has no time zones, no borders, right? So that's when you can become something that really hits the cultural zeitgeist and you can connect with your people, right? And this is the other thing that's really exciting about this notion of people. We don't pick up demographic information on our viewers, which I think is so freeing, because I think you go into things with a bias and what you think is an intuition about, oh, this person's gonna like that, right? I'm making this for that audience specifically. But because what we do is we connect the right story with the right viewer at the right time, there might be an 85-year-old grandma in Tokyo who's watching the same thing as a 17-year-old boy in Idaho, and what connects them is their love of that particular story. And so we're blind to that. Right, we were about putting the right story in front of the right person at the right time.
Thank you, Lisa. It's so reassuring to hear that that's what that mandate is. And I think there's a lot of us who don't know what that mandate is, so thank you for sharing that. Our next person that we're going to go to is a filmmaker. She's done both film as a narrative filmmaker and as a documentary filmmaker, and she's a Peabody Award winner. Please welcome Grace Lee. What Grace has been doing, and you can please talk about that, but you were back here with us back in 2002 when we were doing all this at the very beginning, and so we're like all veterans here. But what you and Leo have been doing has been addressing Asian American filmmakers in the documentary sphere. She gave an amazing keynote speech at the IDA Documentary Summit back in September. And it's online, right? It's online. Please check it out. So let me introduce you, Grace Lee.
Thank you. It's great to be on this panel with all these amazing people. Just want to talk a little bit about the Asian American Documentary Network. It came out of conversations that began, that have been going on, let's say, within the documentary space, which is still very... could use a little bit more diversity, let's just say say that. But Leo Chang and I just started talking about what can we do as, you know, filmmakers who have a little bit more experience, you know, sort of help build up the, you know, the emerging filmmakers. How do we build community, especially at this moment? And how do we both, like, create leaders? How do we support each other? How do we create community? So out of the Getting Real conference where we convened a bunch of Asian American documentary filmmakers, ranging from Academy Award winners to people who just graduated from college, we started this network. And if anyone's interested, please approach me or Leo or Chi-Hui Young, who's also part of the conversations. To create this now over 100 plus people, and there's so many people we haven't even reached out to, we haven't really spoke about it publicly, but the idea is to build our community, support each other, you know, start talking about what it means to reframe the conversation about storytelling from an Asian American lens. It's not replacing any other lens, but just what would happen if we recentered or centered the stories like on immigration and thought about Asian Americans? What would happen if we looked at what's happening in our cities or, you know, on global issues from an Asian American perspective? It gives you a different point of view on how to look at the world. That's what we're doing, and would love to talk to any of you about that afterwards. Can I just say too that if there are people who are interested, I mean, this space is way smaller than I thought. We're going to try to at least just find me, or is Leo here? I'm going to just point him out, so if you can't get to me, find Leo. Oh, there he is. He's waving his hand right there. find us and talk to us more.
And then what else are you guys coming up with next?
Oh, sorry. Okay. So we actually, starting it from September, we decided to let's just have a strategic plan about this. So one of the things is, one of the parts of our plan is over the next year, we want to really grow the network. We're going to be doing some convening at the CAMFest in San Francisco in May. Meanwhile, we have meetups happening all over the country. So far, they've happened in San Francisco, probably one coming up in Chicago. We did one in Hawaii at the Hawaii Film Festival. And then eventually, in November of next year, we're going to do something with the Ford Foundation to continue this conversation, because it's an ongoing one.
Thank you, Grace. The interesting thing about Grace and Leo, they didn't wait for someone to tell them, you guys got to do this. They just decided you're going to do this on your own. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of us work in a vacuum. A lot of you are filmmakers who just sit in your edit room. And we need it sometimes just to be a collective where we can at least throw ideas off each other, support each other with resources as well as, I think, information as well as, you know, criticizing our own work. And you can do this yourselves, too. You don't have to wait, but you can start your own if that's how you feel, so you don't feel like you're out there by yourself. But on the other hand, you know, we're here at Sundance, and we are so pleased that we've got Ann Lai, who's part of the Sundance Institute. She's the Director of Creative Producing Initiatives, and they've got amazing programs. I'm lucky enough to be a mentor at the Producing Summits together with them, and, you know, through the years, they've been able to bring... the one that comes to mind is... what's his name? The one that did Spot Night, Andrew Ahn, you know, where you took it and you guys really practiced. So please tell us about the programs that you have that you guys are doing.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me here. I feel like I miss so much of the festival when I'm at the festival. And so to be in this room and actually sit down and have a conversation and engage is really, really wonderful. So thanks for having me. I'll talk a little bit about sort of the basis of what the Institute is. Obviously, we all know the festival. We're here. And it's a wonderful collection of everyone who wants to be here, including film lovers, which is really wonderful. The heart of the Institute, we're a nonprofit organization, is the labs. And by that, we mean an environment where we create a workshop where more experienced writers, directors, producers can share their knowledge, share their feedback, share their ideas, share their experiences with who we consider emerging artists. So I work in the feature film program. So that's screenwriters, directors, producers with a feature film project in hand. We call them emerging because oftentimes they're first or second time filmmakers. And by filmmaker, by the way, I mean writer, director, or producer, because a producer is a filmmaker. And we are, what we're interested in trying to find through our labs and to try to support them is the idea that there's someone with an inherent voice. They may not have the craft or the skill to get there yet, but they have something to say, and they feel very energized and passionate about saying it. It's urgent to them. It could be urgent politically, it could be urgent socially, but most importantly, it's urgent to them. Andrew Ahn, who is possibly one of the nicest people ever, came to us as a first through, actually, I think the Screenwriters Intensive. And so this was a program that had stemmed from our labs with this idea of giving someone support a little bit earlier. Maybe they weren't quite ready for a lab. And then came to a screenwriter's lab. We supported him as he was trying to figure out, like, I have this film that I want to make that's very personal. It's mostly in Korean, even though it takes place in LA, in Koreatown. How do I go about doing it? And we can't take any credit from the fact that he went out there and figured out how to do it. However, if we can try to make some introductions, connect him to certain people, give him access to writers, directors, producers who have more experience, who can share ideas, who can make connections for them, that's incredibly valuable. You know, with that idea, I just want to pivot a little bit to talk about a program we started. Is that okay? We started in 2013 for specifically called the Asian American Fellowship. So I'm going to point out Philip Fung here, who leads the A3 Foundation. And they actually came to us saying they have an interest in, like, how do we see more work come from Asian Americans? How do we do that? That is the most amazing gift that anyone can do, which is to go to an organization, go to an artist, go to a place and say, I have this resource. How can I help achieve the mission that we're trying to do, and also maybe achieve the vision that you guys have as well. And so with A3 Foundation's support, they became the founding sponsor for our Asian American Fellowship, which is really, really wonderful. And that first fellow is a writer-director by the name of Ryan Koo, who's in post-production on his first feature for Netflix. Wow. So it's really, really amazing. So I want to say thank you to that. The only other thing that I will say in terms of how we think about moving forward and what we're interested in trying to do is that we know that it's a pipeline. And in fact, I think we probably had this conversation, Philip, early on too, which is it often takes many cycles to get to a point where maybe someone participates in a lab. My personal goal is, even if you're not selected for a lab, it's not a prize, even if you don't get selected to be participate in a lab, you can still be encouraged to do your work. You can still create work. You can get it out into the world. You don't need anyone's permission to do it. If you can find help from a lot of people who are up here and all of you who are in the room, that has tremendous value. And I think one of the things that we've seen that's been very encouraging on the side of the Asian American Fellowship specifically is over 3 years, our admissions grew. I'm going to get the number wrong because I left my cheat sheet somewhere on the other side of the room, but grew from, I think, 214 to 540 this year. And what's important about that is these are people we didn't know. Right. They're artists creating work. And I often hear from people, which is, oh, I saw this, and I thought maybe that would be for me. That, to me, has so much value. I don't care if you go off and make something. I hope that you do. But the idea that you have something valuable to say, there might be a place that particularly is interested in you, but that you get permission to go do it. You don't need anyone's permission, but you can get encouragement. That has huge value. So to just point out A3 and a lot of the amazing, wonderful, generous advisors. Effie's been an advisor. Lisa's been an advisor. Everyone who contributes to that makes a huge difference. So, yes, and Naja. I mean, makes an enormous. And Naja was a contributor also to our Asian American Fellowship and created a grant. So it has a huge, huge impact. And so even if you're not a writer, a director, a producer, you're not involved in film directly, but you are interested in seeing film about Asian American stories or from Asian American filmmakers that may or may not be about an Asian American experience, you have a way to contribute. So I encourage everyone to think about what's the way that they can contribute, and I have the benefit and the luck of being in a position of trying to help some of that along.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. And as you said, you know, we're going to segue over to Philip from A3 Network. And, you know, what I see Philip and the founders of A3, they're like the next generation of philanthropy. And they've chosen film as their platform. And I'm really hoping that you, like people like yourself, like Naja, can inspire other Asian Americans to actually, those who have actual, you know, accessibility to actually fund films. We know that, you know, you and Naja have been working hard, but, you know, my hope is that you can inspire them to do the same thing. So please tell us about A3.
Hi, all, and thanks everyone for organizing this. I'll talk a little bit about A3. It was an organization founded exactly 4 years ago today at Sundance to help Asian Americans in media. It was founded by me, Julia, Alex Franklin, and we've all been pretty lucky to be, you know, in tech and do pretty well. We were all like early Facebook employees and ended up starting our own companies later. And I think like when we were able to get together and talk more, we were like, you know, that we never really seen any role models when we grew up. I grew up in Brooklyn. I never like saw anyone that looked like me on TV and never anyone outside. And so now that we have a chance to help out, you know, why don't we do something and help out? And that's how it started. And so some of the programs we do, one of the main ones is, of course, the Asian American Fellowship with Sundance, and has been really helpful to kind of put that along and kind of help us to just promote Asian Americans and get them sponsored to kind of get to the next level. And we also do that also with YouTube as well. We've sponsored several interns at YouTube with that work with some of the famous YouTube stars, and they've had a leg up, and then we've had some success there as well. So that's one of the things the organization does. The second thing we do is try to get Asians in the tech community more focused and interested in this topic of helping people in media and agents in media in particular. That's been a really hard thing to do, even though Asians represent a big part of the tech community. I think Silicon Valley tech companies is about 30% Asian. We rarely see anyone that kind of speaks out about these issues that that gives money and so forth. So I think we spent a lot of time just like making that known, making sure that we could have some mixers so that like the tech community can meet the artist community. I think we're gonna have one next month in Dolores Park somewhere. And so we're gonna do that. And I think lastly, it's just, you know, how do we get other Asians to also contribute, because it's an issue that I think most Asians like understand that it's obviously an issue. They never see anyone that they can relate to in media, but I think the misconception is that it's someone else's problem or it'll solve itself over time. And I have some relatives, like a distant part of family, that kind of came here from China a long time ago, like 1920s. They grew up here in Oakland, actually in California, and they did pretty well. They went to laundry business, and then their kids went to like Berkeley in the 40s, and then they did pretty well. And they thought, you know, by the time, you know, their kids grow up, like this issue would go away. You know, the Asian would be more visible, but that didn't really happen. And then their kids grew up in the 60s and 80s, and it didn't happen then. And you know, we're here now, right? So like it's not a problem that's going to go away. It's gotten slightly better, but I don't think I can even think of any like major stars that, you know, my kid would put a poster on the wall for. So, you know, I hope that everyone can really reach out and just try to help out somehow, whether it's with A3 Foundation or just by yourselves. So, thanks.
I have a question for you. How do we access you guys? What do we do to, Bush, if you're a filmmaker that's sitting here, how do they get to you? And then if you're a contributor that wants to support A3 Foundation, how can they get to you?
Sure, that's a great question. On the supply side of like how do filmmakers get to us, we really don't fund individual filmmakers because I think the issue is like we don't know what's good. We don't know what's going to make it. Just like in tech startups, I think like if you fund an individual startup, like 90% of the time it's going to fail. So that's why you fund platforms like Sundance that know what they're doing, that can kind of get, you know, they know what's going to succeed, what's going to fail. So we fund those, YouTube, things like that. And so it's really not too helpful to reach out to us directly, but reaching out to Sundance, reaching out to YouTube, that's really the way to do it. And in terms of like on the other side of helping us, like I said, we have these mixers in San Francisco all the time, and just a free dinner, and then you can come over and just talk to us. And we'd love you for you guys to help out. But if you want to just do it yourselves, like that's great too. Like it doesn't have to go through A3. So our website is a3foundation.org or facebook.com/a3foundation. But you know, if you could reach us through that, or you know, just message us there, and then we'll get back to you and figure out ways that we can work together. And I hope you guys can. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for taking this in that independent spirit. Just you, the three of you guys, for just starting it up. This is really great, and it's a great example for the next generation, and even the people that are there who are, you know, in that tech world. Because I think it's a hard, like you were saying, it's a hard community for us to break through to, especially for film. We are very fortunate to have with us as our next guest is Brixen Diamond, who's the chairman of the Black House Foundation. Black House has been a mainstay here at Sundance for a number of years. And I remember the year that we had American Promise here, every night this would be the place that we would know that we would meet up and just to celebrate, toast each other, and commune. And you guys have really embraced, you know, the theme of today, Elevate, Incubate, Demonstrate. And you've been doing this, you know. The question I have for you is, you know, the history of, as well as what can we do within our own community to kind of move ourselves along? What would those challenges be that you guys had to face? And then what can we kind of look forward to in that realm?
I have to hold my own mic. Okay, I'll push through. Being a little less special, but that's okay. So I'm going to talk about three things, you know, how we started, how we work, and what's next. And I think that pulls in how we need to work together as communities. But it also talks about how we cross lines and cross our communities to get Black House started. So Black House was born. I came here in 2006 with a bunch of folks from business school, and we rented a house. I was the only black person in the house and one of the only single people in the house. And we got tickets to Hustle and Flow, and they were like, okay, I guess you're going to see that. So I was like, I guess I am. And so I saw that incredible experience of a film being seen for the first time by its cast and being bought before the credits roll by these crazy people running up and down the aisles, and the Stephanie Lane second mortgage your house to finish it, and all this story, and you arc that over to Oscar season, and they're winning Academy Awards for 3-6 Mafia is Hard to Hit for a Pimp. That's just crazy. Oh, yes. If that could happen for Hard to Hit for a Pimp, there's some opportunities here. So came back here with Ryan Tarpley, who was a good friend of mine, who was in education then, but eventually went to work at CAA, running diversity at CAA. And we were in the Queer Lounge, Ellen Wong in the Queer Lounge, and Carol Ann Shine, a white woman from San Diego who mostly produces black gay cinema. She was here with Punks and Patrick Ian Polk, came over to us and said, we gotta do this for black people, what Queer Lounge is doing. And we were like, okay, sure. And Carol went off and produced a TV series, Noah's Ark, and came back in September and said, are we doing this? And we were like, this is September 2006. And we're like, what? You mean January? A thing? So we rented a space on Heber in 2007 for 8 days. Don't ever do that. It's killer. I don't know how you do it at the festival. So Ellen is giving us inspiration. Queer folks are getting us here. And these people behind the counter, Paula and Alan, have hosted us 8 of our 10 years. So I may cry. So they were in a space that was different from this because we were wrapping pipes and getting electrical boards replaced so the fire marshal would give us a permit. But they have been ride or die with us from the beginning. And we've now been with them another 5 years down at 804 Main. So again, these cross communities coming together. I'm a salesperson, so I went out and raised a bunch of money, but also wrote big checks personally. You know, you land on a plane and people are like, we need $10,000 because we can't get to our house. You're like, now? Okay. So a lot of personal commitment there, but also brands that I knew. It was, yeah. It was like, you need what? We can't get to the house, we need a house. So bringing people here, and the notion was we walked the streets of Sundance and we left Hustle and Flow and didn't see other black people. And so I hear your numbers, which are so impressive, which is just not what we've experienced. In 2007, there were 7 black films in this festival. And we are very generous in our count. It's director, it's content, and I will do third lead. If Danny Glover's in your movie, I will count it as a black film. So, you know, 7. Last year, we hit 36. This year, we're at 28, and that's films, TV projects, web series, and VR. Black folks in virtual reality for you. So that's sort of the place we've come to. And it's been this notion that we're going to create with Alan and Paola here at Bodega or Buena Vida, this sense of home in this space so that you could have sustenance to go out and fight the fight, right? In the sense that you're going to be able to come to Sundance or where we've then been, Tribeca or LA Film Festival or the Montclair Film Festival or AFI Fest or TIFF and at least have one place you can come and see people like you and see examples of what's going on so that you can go out and be fortified to get on that bus, watch those films, and go back and produce your movie and figure out how to slip a note to somebody to say, hey, black film, watch me, look at me. But you've learned what the inside tricks were through our panels, and you felt the comfort of our home with our parties and our grits in the morning. So that's a lot of what we have done for the last 10 years. This is our 10th year at Sundance. And you see where we've gone in terms of arc. And it used to be you walk around the streets and you see a black person, you'd be like, hey, yeah, what are we doing now? Because I'm not letting you go, because I won't find you again. And so now we're in a space where we're thinking about, you're like, hey, go to your movie. But no, we're in a space now where we still do 4 days because that's more reasonable. We are at capacity every day. There are panels. We start at 10 in the morning, go until midnight every day for 4 days with incredible partners, many of whom are on this screen behind us, which is important about that partnership these brands have in our communities. But the next for us is figuring out what's beyond the festival, right? Great conversations with our partners because our partners aren't just the brands and our constituents, but also the festivals. We were never guerrilla. We never want to be someone hiding out in the shadows. We want to be at the table every step of the way. And Sundance has been a great partner in that with a dialogue and an honest dialogue when we would say that's not enough, right? You have to go farther. and they've come back and told us what was possible, and we've changed that reality. And I think that goes to the future. So where else can we be? What festivals can we rationalize? Where can we use digital content to connect? Where can we incubate? So Latino Reel spent its third year with us in our space on Fridays. So our opening Friday is now Latino Reel Day. So bringing in Latino filmmakers and just reaching across. And I think that this movement and the folks I've been in touch with so far, and it's a movement, right? So that's the demonstrate piece. I did a talk at orientation for my undergraduate alma mater, Brown University, where we're all just rebels and revolters all the time. And they were asking me, how do you protest? And I said, the protest is not the thing. The demonstration is an act to move your negotiation forward, right? So it's this continuum. So we as communities, Black, Latino, Asian American, LGBT, Native, Indigenous, just all have to work together to make sure that when you're sitting in a room and you see people like you on the screen, you're asking about the other groups, right? You're holding accountability across the line. Because we all know the numbers for 2040, the majority minority only works if we're a group. Yep. And we're working together and we're watching out. And we don't let people who are in the mainstream take that as an excuse to be marginalized and go off somewhere else, right? You gotta stand up. My favorite Donald Trump quote, and I have a favorite from, because there's so many, from Twitter at the inauguration was, in watching the women's marches, which were very important, he was like, why didn't you all vote? If this is how you felt, there was a mechanism. And so we got to vote with our tickets and box office, with our streaming views, with what we demand from our partnerships. When we have philanthropy, what we demand from that, not just for our own communities, but for the other communities that need to be represented. And the stories that just are untold, because we have such beautiful, amazing stories that are unconventional. And with the democratization of with content creation, those words are so new from 2007, we got to push those people who are brilliant out to do it.
Thank you so much. I think you covered the spirit, I think, of what we're all trying to do here. So thank you very much, Brixen.
Stay woke,
exactly. Our next participant here on our panel is Justin Chan. You guys might know him from Twilight. You might know him from the TV show that was just on, Dr. Ken. You played the daughter's like boyfriend. Yeah. But Justin's been an actor first. But also, too, I mean, most recently, you know, with his film Gukir, he's a writer, director. A lot of us have been following him for a long time. And I think he's another one of those people who said, okay, I'm not going to wait for someone to support what I got to do. I got to tell this story. And I think that was the birth of Gook, but I don't want to take up all the time, but I just want to say thank you for coming. Thank you for actually getting a film done. Because I have an 80-20 rule in Hollywood, and you know I've been in Hollywood. It is 80% of people like to talk about it, and there's 20% that actually finish it. So thank you.
Thank you. And yeah, I mean, all these people on this panel I respect so deeply. Effie, I don't know if you remember or not, but like you were producing that film One Kind Day.
Yes!
I wanted to be in that so bad.
It was
oh man, I want to be in so bad. And you know, here's what I want to say is, funny enough, all my first opportunities were given to me by African Americans. Not by Asians. You know, one of the godfathers, Ralph Farquaad? Yeah, he's the one that gave me all my first jobs, believed in me, pushed me. And I was so grateful, and I still am so indebted. But the really disheartening thing was that there was no Asians around to help me. And it was really disheartening because it was like I'm looking around for some help or some mentorship, and I couldn't find it. And, you know, even with this whole journey with Gook, it was incredibly difficult. You know, I was trying to get financing, and you know, Phil was talking about how in Silicon Valley, they don't actually end up donating. And I was just so sad because my biggest investor was French, and I'm like, why does it have to be this way, man? Like, I was pounding the pavement, knocking on every door, and I just couldn't find anyone who would get excited about the thing. I wasn't going to let that stop me. I kept pushing through it. I knew this year, my film is set, the backdrop is the LA riots and the Rodney King verdict. And this is the 25th anniversary of that riot, and I knew I had to get it done because this year is the year to commemorate that. And after the inauguration and all that stuff, like, we got to talk about these things. And you know, for me as a creator, I could just sit back and just audition and just be a victim, you know. I wrote an NBC op-ed. You know, David, you wanted to talk about this, right? Yeah. The NBC op-ed. I wrote an NBC op-ed about some really racist audition, and I just remember going in there, and the character wasn't written like the stereotypical Asian character. I heard in the waiting room that they're tricking people. They're getting people to go in, mm-hmm. and then when you're in a vulnerable state, That's what they're having them do it. And I was just like, I'm not doing that. So I called my manager and I told him, I'm not doing this. I don't care. I don't care what the rate is or whatever. And he's like, well, okay. So he called the casting director and they're like, well, if he doesn't want to do it, then just tell him to leave. And I'm like, okay, I'm leaving. I went to the waiting room and I'm seeing, you know, I won't name any names, but I'm just seeing it, my fellow guys. And I got to protect them too, because we need to make a living. We need to make a living. But I looked at them, I'm like, y'all are just bitches. No one's gonna come with me. Are you serious? You're just gonna sit here and get violated like that? So, you know, on that tip, I was like, dude, I as a creative, I really have to create something myself. And I feel like that is the most effective, fastest way to make a difference, is to create something. You know, they cannot control my content. I create it myself, which is why I got independent financing. I didn't want anybody telling me how to make my movie. I told this at my Q&A, when I first was approaching investors, they asked me, because there's no white people in my film, you know, and I'm not excluding anyone. It's just that's my perspective and that's just my story, and there just wasn't white people in the ghetto during the riots, you know, so they left. They barricaded, yeah, you know. Yeah, they love Paramount. And you know, the investors were saying, is there any way you can get a white character in this film? I'm like, no. Is there any way some cop can just show up and he's white and he tells you guys to leave? I'm like, no. Is there any way you can get one of your famous actor friends to come in and do a date? I'm like, no, that's not the story. You know, that just was so ludicrous to me. And, you know, it's really about, you know, really standing up, letting your voice be heard, like Brixton was saying, and not flinching, you know? I feel like we're so worried about the repercussions or whether we might not work, but if you create it, they can't control that, you know? And I truly believe in numbers, rather than being so segregated by, you know, ethnicities, we do become so much more powerful as a group. And I totally agree with that message 100%. Yeah.
Wow. I think this is a really good time for us to open it up to any audience questions that you guys might have. We've got a great panel. We've got limited time, so we want to take as many questions as we can. So if you want to raise your hand if you have questions of the panel. And then also, John Cho is on his way, so he'll be here for the reception. So he's got other press coming. Hey, so he's coming. That's all I got to say. He's coming, so. He's right over there, but he will be here. So does anybody back here have any questions? Miss Christine Choi. For Anne, what is the question again?
So my cousin Dalton was her student, and he spoke so fondly of you. And by the way, this is my cousin who did not watch any movies growing up. This is my cousin who I never talked to about with movies, and then he went and he's doing great work as an editor. He loves you. Thank you.
It's not about me. It's about Sundance. I don't know how long you've been. I was here 30 years ago, and I've seen great changes in Kansas University. Mm-hmm.
Give her a mic.
Thank you.
Here you go. I got you.
And I see, I was here for Who Killed Vincent Chin. At the time, there was no people of color. I was the only one. That's when I told Robert Redford, I said, what is this all about? White people are Whitestone? So the following year, he invited me as a jury member. But overall, I've seen really many changes in terms of diversity, in terms of different voices, I represent different community. However, also I see that the contradiction. Too many Hollywood people here. So this independent vision, independent voice, is started with the Harvey Weinstein sex lies video. And a lot of the filmmakers come here, it's no longer with that independent spirit. It's becoming a market, becomes much larger commercial venue. So how do you feel about where is the future of Sundance is going to go?
That's such a big question. I mean, what I'll do it really quickly. I mean, what I would say about that is I think that no matter, I understand what you're saying, and I do see that there are, I think there are artists that we often will find that are destined to be, this becomes, making an independent film becomes a stepping stone to going into Hollywood, and I have no problem with that. I like big tentpole movies, and I used to work on big tentpole movies. But at the same time, what I will say is that it often, what I see, and I'm not part of the festival programming, I work more with labs, what I will see happen, and I don't see this going away, is that we benefit from writers, directors, producers working in sort of big Hollywood level that are inspired by the young filmmakers that they work with and they advise and that they spend time with that are doing first, second movies are so hard to make, that then inspire them to remember to make work that's authentic to their own personal voice. So I see it as sort of this balance and this conversation that happens between the more experienced and the less experienced. I can't really necessarily speak to, I think, the market forces that happen here. The one thing that I will say that we talk a lot about and we think a lot about, and I think everyone in this room thinks about, is how do we make independent filmmaking, independent work, sustainable? That becomes a question of how do you pay your rent. So that's where I can't argue why someone does need to go into Hollywood in order to make a paycheck and pay the rent. But I do think that the creative inspiration going back and forth, I think that's where the independent voices won't go away. I don't know that that quite answers your question, but I do think that I personally don't think that's going to go away. Oh, yeah.
So I'll talk about our dreams. So, and I just want to be careful about keeping spaces too exclusive, right? Which again, artists versus commercial is also part of that exclusivity. And so for our filmmakers, for Black filmmakers, we need a platform to get jobs and to eat and to work, right? And Sundance provides that marketplace for our content to get acquired. And Black House looks at acquisition festivals because it's great to go and share the art, but you know, there's so many stories. So there are two things. One is, you know, for me, the poster child for this cross-cultural diversity at Sundance for me is a Master of None, right? So you got the co-creators, you got Lena Waithe, who is a Sundance producer multiple times over, and we've been riding with her for a very long time, who now has a production, you know, a series deal at Showtime, making different kinds of series. You know, Issa Rae sort of came here, I think some stuff with us, and never had a film in the festival, or you all brought her. You brought her here. Who brought her here? Somebody brought Issa. Somehow Issa got here with Awkward Black Girl. Southwest brought her here. Somebody brought her here. So we started. You know, she's here. We're gonna use her for panels, right? She didn't come through that traditional route, but I think she benefited from the conversations happening here, because HBO needed that content to really change the world, right? To change how television happens. So I love those kinds of shows that I think spring out of here, and I think, you know, we can't deny it. Netflix is changing the game. Right, so it's not big studios. It's, you know, we had Ted Sarandos last year opening up at Black House, and he said, you know, what he was proud of or thought was interesting was it used to be your movie wasn't a movie. It wasn't a movie unless it was in the theater, and now your movie isn't a movie unless it's on Netflix. Right. So what I've liked about Sundance is it's a conversation, and you've been in it for more than 30 years, and now we're talking television and VR and web series and stuff that I think in 2007 when I got here, Sundance would have been like, okay, no. But we've evolved, and so that evolving conversation from our perspective as an institute associate has been an important one that I don't think will ever stop or get right.
But I also think it's all about opportunity, you know, and it's like you're here, your film is, you know, it's an opportunity. And I think we can take a look at all of these festivals. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody wants to get their film picked up by somebody somewhere, because you all want to have your film seen and other people can experience what you do. So I think, you know, it's about having opportunity. If we can take advantage of the opportunity at any of these festivals that offer, I think you can still do that. But I think what you have to maintain as a filmmaker is your own independent spirit, if you so choose to. You know, so I think it's something that kind of stays in that way. And I think of two people that come to mind that have come through here. One is Justin Lin, even though he's big blockbuster. But if you take a look at his trajectory, it was no accident that he was putting people of color in stories at Fast and Furious back in Tokyo Drift. And it kept it going. And so then before they're even talking about diversity, he was practicing diversity. And then I take a look at Ava DuVernay. Yes. And she was the director of what she won, the best director. And she was the first black woman, but she walks the walk and talks the talk. So I think you look at these people who have taken the opportunity of being at a place like Sundance, but haven't lost that independent spirit. And I think that's what's exciting and inspiring for me. All right, one another question? Yes.
Hi, Jody Long, Visual Communications. I have a question for you, Lisa. You mentioned that Netflix can target to get to that grandmother and to the 17-year-old that want to see the same content. How do you do that?
What's the secret sauce?
What's the secret sauce?
Well, the beauty is I think that we have the great benefit of being at a really great cross-section of art and technology. So we have a couple thousand engineers that are in Silicon Valley that are devising some incredible algorithms. But the way to think about it for me is your viewing habits change. Think about what you like to watch on a Friday night after you've had a long, hard week versus Sunday afternoon. Think about what you watch on your iPad versus your big screen. It's probably different, right? Think about what you watch with somebody, your partner, versus when you're by yourself. And so for us, the key is really understanding what your viewing habit is in that moment. And we have the ability to understand who you are and what you're looking to watch in that moment. So we are constantly reevaluating what you're excited about in that moment. So about every 12 hours or so, we're looking at your viewing habits and we're connecting you across the 97 million subscribers to try to figure out exactly who has similar tastes. Right, and what we also are able to do is, if you're highly aligned with this cohort of other viewers, if those viewers watched the next title and loved it, rated it 5 stars, the probability that you will too is very, very high, and that's proven out. Now, the next 12 hours, you might want to watch something totally different, so who you'll be aligned with will match that mood, right? So we're constantly taking your real information at any given moment. The other thing that I think is really exciting, and I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg of this, is that we don't ghetto on the service content by type. So we go in there and we're really looking at tones, feelings, what the overall mood is of a piece of content, not so much by genre. So you mentioned Ava DuVernay. We worked on 13th together. You know, this is a film about civil rights. This is a film about humanity. This is a film about integrity and really, really standing up for what you believe in. There are scripted films that have those same tones. So in that moment, if you've just watched a scripted movie, but the tones are the same as what might be evoked in 13th, that will be presented to you, right? So you're not stuck in a particular lane where you watch a short and all you get is shorts, or you watch a doc and all you get is docs. It's actually the cross-pollination of the opportunity to engage with a new story. And that's what's really exciting. And the other thing that we're really discovering is increasingly we're going into our international markets and finding really incredible local storytellers. And we're giving them a platform in their marketplace, but also globally. You know, so we had very recently a original series called 3% that was out of Brazil, huge in Brazil, but huge numbers ex-Brazil, right? So you're talking about a Portuguese language title that's now traveling around the world, and people are getting presented this because they like this sort of dystopian sci-fi story, right? And so we can break it down beyond the obvious, right? Because we're all very complex, right? Our tastes, our moods, our selections, what's going to really speak to us at any given moment is evolving, and we want to hopefully be able to respond to that and give you the right story.
Thank you. All right. We're going to have to wind this down. It's been a really great conversation, but before we go, I need to thank the people who made this possible. Najla Lockwood with Rise Media. Larnie Dakanai with Comcast NBC Universal. Stephen Gong with Center for Asian American Media and his whole staff who's all here. Frances Culotto with Visual Communications and his whole staff that's here. Irene Cho from her Morning Calm Solutions, because she's so morning and she's so calm. No, but seriously, without these people and the people behind the scenes, and I've left anybody out, you guys know who you are, and I just want to say thank you for helping us organize this. This is the 15th year. We want to continue to do this. Every first Sunday is what we started out in 2002 of Sundance is where we'll meet. So just stay close. Also, there are websites that you guys want to go to, like CAM has their website, Visual Communications has their websites, Angry Asian Man, A3. Also on Facebook, the AMPUS Asian people put together Asians in Hollywood, where we try to keep everybody updated what's going on there. And we just want to keep everybody mobilized and awake. I think that's what we're looking at as we start to move forward in the next 4 years. So with last parting shots, I'd like to pass the microphone to each one of you to talk, just give us like, you know, next steps or what you see for the future, just and give us some words of inspiration.
Oh my God, that's so hard. I mean, just in terms of thinking, moving forward, and one of the things that excites me the most as we talk about diversity, as we talk about inclusion, you know, for me, the thing that I always get excited by when I'm at a festival, when I'm at other organizations' festivals as well, is the sense of community and a sense of purpose. So I think no matter what everyone is doing, if there is a purpose to why you're doing it, not trying to fulfill what someone else may want, and by that I mean whether it's Hollywood or what other people are sort of demanding of you as an artist and in terms of content, what I look forward to is when people feel empowered, and if we can help anyone do that, to feel empowered to talk about the story that they want to tell in the way in which they want to do it that's truthful to them. So. Thank
you. I guess for my parting thoughts, for A3 in general, I think we're just going to keep continuing what we're doing and just support artists. But I think I would like to challenge everyone to try to support somehow. It's pretty hard to do. It's pretty hard to get these great films out there. And you don't really need that second Tesla. You could just go with one and use that money to fund Justin's movie. And you know we wouldn't be talking about this anymore, right? So
please,
you know, please. So please, just do that.
I would say similar to Anne. For all the filmmakers, producers, writers, know what your north is, right? Like, listen to Justin talk about, no, I don't want a cat. No, that is not my story. People often ask, what are you looking for, right? When they sit down, they say, what do you want? I said, no. Tell me what you cannot sleep every night because you're dying to write about it, to share it. That's what we're looking for, right? Your unique story, your unique vision, your unique execution against that. So take the time to really, really refine your voice, right? And then let it be heard. So, thank you.
Hey, you know, I'm just gonna say it. The next 4 years, we're gonna be a bit under attack. And as film, television, art, content creators, those are our bullets, you know? That is how we're gonna be able to implement change. It is by all of us together, people of color, women, LGBTQ, all of us, we will be able to win. But we are, like, I really feel like it's storytelling is a moment of activation, a moment of activism. It's not, it's a very powerful tool. And that's one of the reasons why I'm very grateful and happy to be here, because I'm looking to meet my brothers and sisters in arms. It is time. Yes. Stay woke. Yes. Yes.
Effie stole my answer. So I'll make up a new one. So, you know, it's just a random thought that we haven't touched on here that I think we have to. In terms of telling our diverse stories across our communities, class has to be on the table, yeah. Right? I think that it's easy to erase it, either because you stereotypically tell a class story about what people think every person in your group looks like and where every person in your group lives. And so I think about, you know, the range of, you know, where I know black content, you know, Blackish is unique because it's this upper middle class black family, right? And so there are content points that need to be across that spectrum that tell every story that you know, goes back to a bit of Effie's point. I think the rise of what we've seen in this recent election was so many voices that aren't being heard, right? And so we have a responsibility as having experienced what voicelessness feels like to carry forward all sorts of voices. And you can take that in whatever way you want, but the one I'm just going to leave to put on your list is class.
I really appreciate what you said. Storytelling is activism, but storytellers are also activists. Yes. And I think in this particular moment, what I've learned from, you know, working on this Asian American documentary network, which is only a few months old, is that we have an incredibly talented, in the nonfiction space, incredibly talented community, and we haven't even met each other yet. You know, we're still meeting each other. And so I think, you know, the most empowering thing has been organizing fellow storytellers, and I hope that we can continue to do that. And please see us, and please fund nonfiction stories as well. So.
As an Asian American artist, to write off what you said, Brixen, class, you know, Asian Americans are seen a lot of times as affluent model minorities, and my film, I tackle that. These two brothers, Korean American brothers in my film, they're blue collar, and I grew up with all these guys. Like, they just are trying to make ends meet. So we got to tell diverse stories, not just, not about getting 2,400 on the SAT or trying to go to Stanford or running a Fortune 500 company. Those are all really admirable traits, but we got to represent everybody. And to go off what you guys are saying, what was it? Incubate, elevate, demonstrate. And my film costs less than a Tesla.
So let me just say thank you to this panel. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Please give them a round of applause. And then also, I want to thank you guys for coming here, not just to this, well, first coming to this, to our Sunday afternoon, but also for coming up and showing up in Park City. You don't know how important that, well, you do, because you're here. But it's important that we show up and that we're seen. And that you own your Asian-ness. Don't be ashamed when you see me walking across the street and put your head down. I've seen that. But it's we're here, and we want to support what you guys do as storytellers and as content creators. So I hope that you'll take this out, take this back with you, and we can move forward. I'm sorry? Oh, right. Sorry. And I'm sorry, while we're here, let me introduce Moira from Sundance. Come on, Moira. Thank you for coming. I totally forgot.
Oh, no, it's okay. I know that, I'm really sorry because I have to run out to another panel, which is why I was running off, but I hate to interrupt this amazing discussion, and it's really, really, really excited to have it, and thank you so much again for Naja, who has been also a great supporter of the work that we're doing over at Sundance. And just a little note, a little bit about me. My name is Moira Griffin. I am the Senior Manager for Diversity Initiatives at the Sundance Institute, and one of the things that we're really excited about Sundance is bringing more women, more people of color into the Institute as creators. So always thinking about ways that we can support you. And Anne has obviously been, you know, an amazing, powerful force, you know, behind the scenes. If you don't know Anne Lai, you know, you have to know her. And she's really done a lot to really push the needle forward. When the A3 Foundation came in and supported the Asian American Fellowship, there were, I think we said at the beginning, there was like 83, you know, submissions to the labs from Asian filmmakers. How many were there? I think the last time we were over 500, right? So you the work that, that we're doing is really to let you know that there, that Sundance is a home for you. Obviously, it's very competitive. Obviously, you know, we're always trying to, you know, to sort of push boundaries. But we really want you to know that we want to know your stories. We want to hear your stories. And we're really, really excited for, number one, for Cam to be here and to do this program, and for us to continue moving forward with all of you. So thank you so much. And I just wanted to say my little piece. And goodbye, David. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Maura. All right, is this, any other introductions I have to make? Okay, so great. So the next part of this we're going to be celebrating. So we've got elevate, incubate, demonstrate, and now we'll celebrate. Thank you again.
Sorry, I just want to make one really quick announcement. So John Cho is trying his best to get here. His film is, his screening is this evening, Columbus. And they've been doing press up until the very moment. So he's trying. He says he's going to try to get here at some point at the reception. So I encourage you to stay. We have wonderful food and drinks. So just hang out and relax and enjoy. And let's have a really good time to this.
Thank you very much.
And we're wrapping up day 9 of the Daily Buzz on KCPW and KCPW.org. This show is made possible with the support of KCPW and our sponsors, Rice Media and Skullcandy. Additional support is provided by Chef Dance, Cloud Electronics, Enki New York, Angry Porcupine, Pop Art Snacks, Park City Roasters, The Big O Donuts, and The Market in Park City. Our producer is Irene Cho.